Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Danny Meringue.
Dusty Bun.
Dusty Hera.
I've been really busy trying to save the world from Russians and monsters.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader.
Of course you have.
1080.
I want to hear it.
The Fan.
Hour number three here on a Monday afternoon on Danny and Dusty. Whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080andthefan or Twitch.tv/1080andthefan. We appreciate you. We love you on this wonderful, wonderful post-championship Monday. Dusty Hera out just for the day. He'll be back tomorrow. Will Ortner in and Jeff Russ behind the glass. Thank you all for being here. We've hit both the championship games. Let's hit a little bit of basketball because I'm in the chair. I'm in control now. I have the microphone. You will listen to what I say.
I am the captain now.
Go full wedding singer. If you say one more word, I will wrap this microphone cord around your throat.
I thought you were going to go with the actual, the wedding singer.
Yeah, no.
With
no.
F-bombs and
Total Eclipse
of the Heart.
Which is fun. But we're not going to go there. Instead, with a little bit of NBA here, we'll kind of cover, I think, all of the NBA here in the sense of the Jimmy Butler suspension, the dunk contest, which sucks, and the Portland Trailblazers. We're on a four-game winning streak. Their longest since October of 2022. They sweep a three-game Southeastern Conference road trip, including those Miami Heat, which, ugh, that game was horrendous. Beat the Orlando Magic, which, again, ugh, that game was horrendous. And then they went in Charlotte by five over a very, very, very bad Charlotte team. And I had a bunch of people asking, what the hell is going on? And I threw my hands up and went, I don't know what else you want them to do other than shut guys down, and they're not going to do that yet. And you can agree with that. You can disagree with that. I think most of you disagree with that. And I get it. I do. My eyebrow is certainly raising because they basically can only win five more games the rest of the season.
If they want to get a top, what is it, three
top,
pick?
Top five.
Chance.
Because they're not getting a top two chance. And they're probably not getting a top three chance. And you're just, if you're angling for the pick, you're hoping for top five odds. Now, you want the top five odds so that you can get the number one overall pick. Because when you start looking at where things are, it gets a little dicey. Now, what happened on this road trip? Well, they beat Miami because Miami is just asunder. They are a complete S show. And I think that's something that has kind of described the Blazers' wins this year. I'm not going to go through all of them because, my God, that'd be a terrible way to do this.
I don't know. I think you should
go through all the wins.
All 17. Please tell me.
Well, that's the really interesting thing. If you look at the game log and you look at the games that they have won, how many of their wins, and I'm not doing this to discredit them. This is a thing Joe Simons and I were kind of discussing the other night. I was like, how many wins do they have that are good wins? Because you take a look at their wins this season, and you've gotten three over the Pelicans, which when they were disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You got two over the Timberwolves when they have no idea what the bleep they're doing. And you beat the Kings when the Kings were in their death spiral before they fire Mike Brown. You have the good wins I see on this: the Atlanta Hawks, the Houston Rockets, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Mavericks when they were missing Luka.
So I wouldn't say that's a good win.
So let's look. Okay, but other than that, the teams you have beat, the Nuggets. There you go, the Nuggets. So there's four. Four of their 17 wins aren't some either version of this team really sucks, their opponent, or something going on with the opponent.
Right.
Like, you can say the win over the Heat, like, the win over the Heat still counts. But would you say that the Heat are going through it right now?
Yeah, I would say that their focus is not on basketball games being won.
Okay. You had a win just recently over the Chicago Bulls. Is that a good team?
Nope.
You had a win, again, over the Charlotte Hornets, and basically what's a roster made of Exhibit 10 guys. Now, the win over the Orlando Magic, I tweeted out the stat afterwards. teams that have shot under 35% from the field and under 25% from three in the three-point era, which is from 1979 to 1980. Mm-hmm. Care to venture just a rough estimate of how many times that has happened? Because it's a lot since 1979, 1980.
Well, I would assume it's mostly in the 80s and 90s.
There's actually a lot of them recently, too.
Just because you have guys chucking it up and just one of those games where everyone's cold.
You know, it's just,
yeah,
in 82 games, it happens.
Law of big numbers.
1,236 times. 1,236 times that it happened, that has happened since 1979, 1980. Okay. That team has won 26 times.
And you got one of them?
And you got one of them. Well, no. No, they got one of, like, you didn't get the win.
Right, because you got the loss.
They beat the Magic. So, like, that's what I'm saying. That Magic team was so bad, there was no level the Blazers could get to lose that game.
Right.
And, again, you look at the Blazers in that game, they scored 102 points. They weren't lighting the Nets on fire. Mm-hmm. Now, they were very disruptive. They were very good. I was talking to a few people in the league yesterday. I was like, did you watch the one of the scouts was like, did you watch the Blazers play the Magic? He was like, yeah. He goes, what happened to Paolo? It may have been Paolo Banchero's worst game of his career. It was 1 of 14 at 5 turnovers. Mm-hmm. Jabari Walker is apparently Paolo Banchero kryptonite.
And then stopper.
And then they barely beat a Charlotte Hornets team without LaMelo Ball, without Miles Bridges, without Brandon Miller, and they lose Caleb Martin after the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And they win by 5. I think they're doing the thing that they need to do to lose the games, but opponents aren't abiding.
Right.
Now, post All-Star break, we've talked about this endlessly. They will find a way to turn off the water. Organizationally, what I've been told is that, look, everybody complains about a losing culture. If these guys are winning games, so be it. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because my whole spiel, as it were, as it pertains to culture, your culture changes when you have the players.
Right. Like, if you have better players, you win more, your culture's better. Unless you're the Heat. Then it's always good.
It is always Heat culture.
Well, and it's not necessarily also a great thing for the culture when you know that you have a lame duck coach that will not be here next year.
Yes and no. I don't really subscribe to the bad culture stuff. In general.
I'm just saying,
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. I'm just saying, and for me, and this this is the point that I'll make with this. The Spurs, one of the best franchises in modern NBA history, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, ever since they had David Robinson move forward, they've been phenomenal.
Yeah, losing doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad culture.
But that's my point. Like, before they got Wemby, they were bad. For 5 years, they were a very bad team. They were not good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Does that mean that the culture's bad? No, I also don't think it means the culture's good. Good culture doesn't mean,
it also means that they have a Greg Popovich there that has been there for 30 years with a proven track record and has built the hell out of a culture there for decades.
But with multiple
championships.
To my point, Mitch Johnson, who has been there for Greg Popovich since he had a stroke, are the Spurs playing very good? Yeah. They are. They're a near play-in team in year two of Victor Wembanyama on a roster that doesn't make a ton of sense because Victor Wembanyama's greatness is so high.
Well, he's a moon star, really, monster, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's,
literally.
I like moon stars. That's good too. He can wrap his arms around a moon. But my point being is that no matter what the culture is, how great it is in the Spurs, or how bad it is in like the Pistons.
Mm-hmm.
The Pistons didn't get drastically better because of J.B. Bickerstaff, the coach that the Cleveland Cavaliers kicked to the curb. They got better because they got better players and Cade took another step forward.
Right.
And that's the thing with this organization right now is like, until they get those guys, I'm personally not worried about the culture. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that I believe in. Now, can it get really bad and toxic and becomes a real problem? Yes. Like, there's levels to how bad a culture can be, but I'm not really worried about a bad or good culture right now.
I think right now the thing that I've always harped on is I want to see the growth in Scoot and Shaden. And I think that it's fair that a lot of the fan base is very confused as to why it felt like when you saw the growth from them, they then got moved to the bench. And I think that that's a fair question to ask of like, it feels like, hey, they're making strides. Could it be against who they're playing? Yes, 100%. It could be, you know, it was set up whatever the other team was doing defensively, makes it easier for Scoot to get shots up, or Shaden, whoever. But I do feel like right now there's just so many questions, and frankly, Blazer fans also are not handling tanking very well and understanding, hey, you're going to suck. You're going to have moments of good. You're going to have moments of really, really bad. And you just want to hope that you, year after year, get more moments of good as opposed to really, really bad. But even at the end of the day, if the best, if best case scenario, right, you get that fifth spot, right? You get that fifth best odds or whatever. There's still no guarantee that you get one of these top players.
No.
So even if you are horrific to the Detroit Pistons case, and the Detroit Pistons are the key of this.
And they fell back multiple times.
Right. So I think I'm kind of okay with the Blazers actually winning games if the growth of Shaden and Scoot continue in this way.
And Klingon, of course. And Denny. Like, and that's the thing, is like Denny's been their best player this year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was phenomenal last night.
And so then you have to include him as well. So
everybody who forgets that Denny is part of the young core, Denny turned 24 2 weeks ago.
Right. So you have this crew of, you have a crew of five guys that you want to continue to see growth. Is it wrong of me to kind of think I'm okay with more wins?
I think it's not wrong of you.
Yes.
But, and for Jeff it is, because he's wholly on the
right.
The full sell.
And if you could guarantee Flag or Bailey, I'm with you.
Which
you can't.
10 years but if ago, you could, you basically could with the way those odds were.
Right.
But I'm raising my eyebrow at this now of like, are they probably winning a little too much? I think they are. It's more of, it has less to do with them and more about a couple other teams starting to pull the plug a bit sooner. And it's like, okay, you need to make a decision here relatively quick, which, to kind of put a little knot on this, is that the trade deadline is 10 days away. Post-trade deadline, I think you're going to see some guys shut down. Now, does that mean I think, you know, if Ant, Jeremy, DA, Rob, Batiste, anybody else who's on the roster now that is here post-trade deadline is going to get shut down the day after the trade deadline? No.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll still see them playing a couple more games, which is why you probably need to start making some tactical decisions, as it were, wink, wink, nod, nod, if you're going to try to put yourself in that mix. What we don't know is if the winning is being encouraged by the front office, by coaching, or by ownership.
Or all three.
Or some semblance of all or none. And that's the thing, is like, and you just kind of have to wonder where the alignment actually sits right now. Because the number that I've said over and over again is 22. 22 wins. You start winning more than that, that's when it starts getting dicey. And that's when you can push your way out.
And again, we are pretty close.
And the one thing in the back of my head that just keeps kind of going, the reminder is, post-trade deadline, this team has been god-awful the last 3 years. It has been the worst, the second worst, and the worst team in the NBA. They have won 13 games over the last three trade deadlines.
That's incredible, actually. That's so good. That's the best bad you can be.
Yeah. So they know how to do that. I mean, this is a team that played John Butler Jr. or John Butler III as a point guard in game 82 against the San Antonio Spurs. Which, hilariously, the Spurs...
Brought to you by Stridex.
Yeah. The Spurs winning that game may have been the thing that got them Victor Wembanyama. Yeah, that made Jeff sick.
Gotta hit you guys.
Yeah. See, this is why ethical tanking, this is kind of this is the counter argument of like, well, if you just play the games and let the basketball gods decide and don't throw John Butler III out there, or John Butler Jr., I can't remember which one, it's one or the other. Shout out John, he's a really nice guy. But it just puts you in these positions where you're like, don't want to have to make this decision.
That's okay. I'll take the zero, teacher.
There you go. 100%. All right. So that's where the Blazers sit right now. Again, 10 days until the trade deadline. 6-game homestand. The Blazers play the Kings February 6th. Like I said, you should expect a press conference, I think, post-trade deadline closing at noon.
Because, yeah, that'll be before tip that day. Yeah.
So,
yeah, look for a roster of about, what, 6 to 7 guys? Maybe some Rip City Remix call-ups?
All the youngins.
Well, I don't think you're going to, like I said, I don't think you're going to see it immediately. I think you're going to see it very quickly with some guys, but I don't think you're going to see post-trade deadline. Okay, ding, 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 ding.
I just meant in terms of, like, some fill-ins for that evening because you could be fairly well short-staffed. On the evening of the deadline,
I don't think that's going to be the case.
Well, it damn well better be.
Looking around the NBA right now, I don't think there's going to be a lot of moves, but we'll see. All right, coming up next, we're going to keep it in the NBA because this is. Do we need to kill the dunk contest? Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. Well, I don't even know. I don't even know what to say. It's a sad day. One of the most joyous occasions of the sporting calendar. The NBA's dunk contest officially died today.
Dude, it's been dead.
No, it officially died today. It still had a chance. It still could reach out there.
No, you know what you're doing? It's Jimmy Carter. Like, before Jimmy Carter passed away, there were days where Jimmy Carter didn't wake up from his sleep. The NBA dunk contest died 10 years ago, just like Jimmy Carter, but we didn't officially announce it until this year.
Yeah, it's still going to happen this year, but I think after this it might be done because stars refused to go, and the dunk contest participants were announced. Steph Castle, who's a rookie from UConn, from Don McLean's title team. He's got some balance. He had a dunk this week where he drove in, came to a stop off to an elevator, and he went, whoa, that's a hell of a dunk. Modest Buzelis, who is supremely bouncy for a 6'10 guy. But again, 6'10 guys don't look good in dunk contests. Big guys look like Dwight Howard in the dunk contest didn't look cool because that's why Nate Robinson looked cool.
Well, yes, on Nate Robinson, I would disagree. I thought Dwight looked cool. I was also younger.
Yeah, but
that's also like prime.
The biggest
kid
you can
age.
Be is like Aaron Gordon, 6'8. Like but Aaron Gordon has like a 47-inch vertical, so it's otherworldly.
Right.
But then you also have Andre Jackson from the Milwaukee Bucks, a second-round pick, who is just a fun, plucky little player with some nice bounce. And then they threw in Mac McClung, and this feels like the bearded lady. It's just there for shock value. It's like little white dude who has hops. It's like he's not in the league.
Right. Is he in the G League still?
Yes. Yes.
Well, look, if we think back about it, going back to the three-point contest, how many times did they drag old Craig Hodges' corpse out of a coffin to come back and defend his title?
Yeah, but you
when
also,
he was not in the league.
But you also have guys like Dame and Steph, and like big-time three-point shooters who had Reggie, Dirk, like you had Larry, like you had guys in that contest who continue to be in that contest.
Saying,
no one, I know.
You bring back the champ. You bring back the champ.
He did get him out. Get him out. I don't know. No one cares.
But they haven't for years, which is why they keep bringing him because he gets some entertainment value out of it.
And look, I've had people ask me, what about Shaedon Sharpe? The league messed up. Look, there was a time when I think Shaedon considered doing it last year before he got hurt, but I don't think it's something he wanted to do.
What's the benefit in it anymore, though, for the young player to do it? Like, there are basketball players that are
well,
young
the problem,
right now.
The problem is they made
the
they
IG.
Made it, well,
I thought the IG would be
forget
enough.
That. Like,
their IG's
no.
fine.
No.
Their IG's fine.
No, they think it's not cool because LeBron made it uncool.
LeBron said no. LeBron said no.
That was the downside of it. He didn't do it when he was asked 20 years ago, and everybody since has been like, well, if he doesn't going to do it, why would I?
Well, it's also the same with most All-Star games. Guess what they're doing this weekend? The Pro Bowl. Guess what's going to suck? The Pro Bowl. There was a time and a place when it made sense.
Sean Taylor killed a man.
Well, I mean, like I think he survived, but you actually used to, back in the day, much longer before I was born, you didn't get to watch every game. You didn't get to watch every team play. So there were special moments where you got to watch, you know, Charles Barkley and Dominique Wilkins team up and take on whoever on the West, right? Take on Robinson and take on Clyde and that whole crew. Like, that was a cool thing that you got to watch. But nowadays, you can literally watch every game from any point in America. So the All-Star game has lost its luster in every major sport. The only one that even draws any numbers is MLB because there's nothing else on. What are you going to tune into but the MLB All-Star Game?
Yeah.
And
but I also think people watch the Home Run Derby because you get guys, big-time names, going into the Home Run Derby who still give a damn.
Agreed. But again, they give a damn because...
But it, also those big-time names seemingly change like every 2 to 3 years in Major League Baseball, unlike in the NBA or even NFL.
Well, and the other thing, too, is they swing
because you have guys
hard.
that flash real hot and then they go right away.
But do you think the names that have been in the dunk contest the last couple of years, you think those guys are popping in the NBA?
No, I don't. No. I do not.
I also think, too, a little bit with the home run contest, and it's something that, like, football, you can't. It looks really bad if you half-ass it, and no football player is going to take the Pro Bowl Save Sean Taylor series, so they half-ass it, which is why no one cares about it. And with the dunk contest, guys will do some cool dunks, but now it's young guys that no one really cares about.
Well, here's the thing. You don't have to be the biggest stars if you get guys like Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine.
And they were awesome, and they were great dunkers, but you don't even get those guys.
And that's the thing is like...
And they made those guys kind of stars. Or at least I knew about them.
Look,
your average fan is like, oh, Aaron Gordon.
Anthony Simons was not getting shine early in his career as a scoring guard in Portland. He goes out there and wins a dunk contest, and it did propel his name out there. It does. It still does. Like, if you... We know who Mac McClung is because of he went out there and won a dunk contest. We also don't care about him because he doesn't have any actual power in the NBA.
Yes, we knew about him because he'd had the cool highlights from college or high school where he has the crazy dunks. I just think for whatever reason, the baseball one works because you have people paying attention to it because, again, there's nothing else to watch. And then for whatever reason, baseball players still like hitting home runs. Everyone, like chicks dig the long ball. Everyone likes watching home runs. Everyone likes hitting home runs. And it doesn't really affect your swing all that much. I think some of it, too, and maybe you're onto something on this, is LeBron said no, so all the other stars said no and stopped doing it. In the MLB, the greatest home run hitter of all time always did it. Barry Bonds always did it when he could, right? You have Ken Griffey Jr. He always did it when
Pujols
he could.
Pujols was out there. And like, you just go down the list of guys who did it.
There's also not a negative to doing.
Oh, no, there is.
For the home run derby?
Oh, yeah. No, you change your swing, and there's the curse of changing your swing for the home run derby.
Well,
and what it did post-All-Star break. Like, there's a whole big deal about
that. But what I'm saying is if you don't win.
Oh, yeah.
Like, to the fan, to the player, there's no...
There's no drawback if you don't win in a dunk contest either, because it's all fake and it's all made up.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there are times where guys will... Hey, you lost in the dunk contest, and they'll use it against players' legacy, which is so stupid. But I think that people do it at times. I think it hypes up Michael Jordan's legacy to a degree.
Yeah,
100%.
It was always a win-win. It was nobody's ever like, oh my god, this guy was so bad in the dunk contest. Blah, blah, blah. It's like we don't go there. We don't. It's
maybe.
Weird.
I mean,
think about the worst dunk contest participant, real quick. You can't think of it.
Fair. Who was the guy who missed?
Wait, did
every
you just
dunk?
Say Ant?
I said, no, he won his. Blew out a candle at the top. It was actually not a bad little dunk. But all right, that's it. It's the death of dunk contest. Just put it away. I'm done.
It's been dead. It's Jimmy Carter.
We're calling the time on it. All right, coming up next, Will and Jeff are going to take you home because I'm heading out the door. I'm going to host a mentoring event for women in sports and events. They, weirdly enough, asked me to come speak and... thank you. I appreciate you guys. I don't know what I can tell you guys, but so I'm gonna head
girls,
out of here.
Actually,
yeah,
women.
No, guys and dude and dudes, unisex.
Dude is for sure unisex.
I'll stand on guys being unisex.
I was giving you a hard time. I had to. You're going to speak at the women's at a women's conference, and you kept saying guys.
Yeah, no, because guys is it implies it is all inclusive. So they'll take you home for the final half hour of today's show. But first, here's the big Kahuna with Sports and Update.
Well, this is unfortunately not Danny, not Dusty. This is going to be a whole lot of Will Ortner and Jeff Russ taking you home.
I know. What are we going to do here?
I just appreciate Danny giving me the heads up that, like, I was going to have at least one segment where I had to kind of drive the boat.
Yeah, well, he gave us the heads up. He's like, when I got here for the last segment.
Yeah, well, he was doing some Waze time computing there and realizing where he had to be and how he had to park and how he had to get there. And it's like, okay, dude, it's fine. I understand. You're good. Get out of here. I got it. I'll drive the boat. I promise.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the easiest park job you've ever had before.
Yep.
but I probably won't hit a rock.
So we got the middle schoolers at home alone while also trying to parallel park.
You have a sixth grader, right?
Seventh.
You have a seventh grader. This is leaving your seventh grader home alone with your little one and trusting her to take the...
Which now it is legally okay because she's 12. She's almost 13.
There you go. And taking the Tostino's pizza, the self-bake.
The Tostino's,
yes. And you're trusting her to bake it in the oven without burning the house down and making sure everyone gets food.
Yeah. So along those lines...
Yes. Yes, let's go. We won't even talk sports this half hour.
Along those lines, there was a while back where we did leave said child at home alone with our 8-year-old. And again, not against the law. She's 12. Yeah. She's in seventh grade. It's it's okay. She went to go make, I forget if it was like an Easy Mac or like one of those microwave bowls of like hot and spicy noodles.
Yep.
Yeah, anyway, she forgot to put the water in it before putting it in the microwave. And yes, nearly burned down the kitchen.
So this then leads into a great one of young, stupid Will Ortner. My first time, I probably was 8 or 9. So I'm not home alone, but I'm in the kitchen alone. Mom is gone. Dad is doing yard work or something. I don't know. Maybe he's in the garage fixing some stuff up. And, you know, I'm a fat little kid. I get hungry. What do I go and find in the fridge? There's some crazy cheesy bread or whatever Little Caesars was doing back in the day.
That'd be I believe the crazy bread.
Right. So it's like, all right, got to get some of this. There's a couple of sticks left. It's in its original aluminum foil packaging.
Ooh.
So I take it and I put it in the microwave. And there's no thought process here. It's just, we're going to put it in the microwave. And I think if I remember the story correctly, 5 minutes.
Ooh.
Got to make sure it gets warm. You can't have cold cheesy bread.
No, you cannot.
That would be a problem. So what do I do? 5 minutes, hit start on that thing, and I start watching. And all of a sudden, it's like, pop, 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 pop. And boom, instantly catches on fire.
Yeah.
I run out. I have to go grab my dad. My dad comes in. He saves the day, you know, turns it off. He ends up pulling it out. All the cheesy bread is burned. Guess who ate cheesy bread that was burnt for lunch?
You did.
This guy. I figured it out. I still had to eat the dead cheesy bread.
Yes. There was another time. This one was even when my wife was home with the kids.
Ooh.
We had some paper plates, like, you know, party plates, right? And they were Barbie-themed pink plates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But on the inside of it, it was apparently now in hindsight, basically a foil fonted Barbie in the middle of said paper plate.
Yes.
Which my wife didn't realize. And yeah, she put that in the microwave and I was like, oh my God, why is the microwave on fire?
Like, why is everything burning down? Oh, wait, Lord. It's there is something about, and this probably shows at times my intelligence level. There's something about finally figuring something out like that, that you don't understand until you understand it.
Right.
Like putting the fork in the microwave.
Yes.
Like putting the aluminum foil in the microwave as a kid where you're just like, oh. Yeah.
If somebody would have told me that first, it makes perfect sense.
Well, no one tells you and you just see other people do it certain ways and you're lazy and you're a kid, so you don't know. And you're like, oh, who cares? Like, yeah, I want to make sure that my fork gets a little bit warm, so I'll leave it in there too. Like, it'll be fine. We're going to be just fine. Everything's going to get figured out. Speaking of things getting figured out, I do not understand what Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys think they have figured out that no one else has figured out with their head coaching decision. And I think that they know they're wrong. Because when did they drop this information that they were going to hire Brian Schottenheimer?
Oh, it was the late night, Friday night news dump.
It has never, there's never been more of a newsy news dump than, hey, you know, we're America's team and everyone's paying attention to when we make our hiring and we're going to hire the guy no one's been interviewing ever for a head coaching job. And we're going to hire him in at what, 459.99?
I think it was later than that even. I think it was like Dallas time, evening time, you know, late night.
Right. He knows he's wrong. Jerry knows he's wrong. His kids know he's wrong. Which kid is it that's trying to polish the turd on this?
Steven.
All right. Listen to Steven try and polish maybe the grossest turd.
Well, and this is also on their playoff drought and in terms of NFC championship and all that kind of good stuff.
Right. Obviously, we're also evaluating where it didn't go right, you know, in terms of you know, this drought that people say we're in terms of a championship game or a Super Bowl. And
look, I get it. I get it, Joneses. You're in a drought right now, and you had your most success when you took a risk.
Mm-hmm.
It was a risk to go get Jimmy Johnson. Frankly, it was a risk to fire Jimmy Johnson and go get Switzer. In the long run, it didn't work out. But for the short term,
for that one year,
very short term, it worked out, and you got a title.
Well, and even in this presser, Jerry Jones is sitting there. They asked him, and he's like, "Oh yeah, this is a tremendous risk. This is a huge risk with the guy that he just hired sitting right next to him." Like, he's acknowledging basically that nobody, Brian Schottenheimer did not interview with anybody.
No, and no one's ever talked about wanting him to be a head coach. In fact, the last job that he had as an OC, Seattle, he was ran out of town.
Yeah. And even, again, like I like to say, like Suk likes to say, my favorite morning show on my way in, they talk about how often Brian Schottenheimer has been promoted to an offensive coordinator position only to get fired and have to go back and do like a passing game coordinator position or a quarterback's coach position.
Brian Schottenheimer is really good in July and August coming up with a game plan. Mm-hmm. He's really good at coming up with ways to find spots against defenses.
Yeah.
When he was in Seattle, Russell Wilson, remember all the talk of Russell Wilson, like, why doesn't he ever get an MVP vote? Why won't anyone vote for Russell Wilson? Oh, he's going to be my vote, Chris Collinsworth, right? It was always at the beginning of the season when he was going, he would show you a look that based on last year's tendencies, he was going to do one thing. And then he would do the exact opposite of that thing that best attacked how that defense was trying to attack what his old tendencies were. And weeks 1 through 8, he looked awesome. He couldn't do wrong. Russell Wilson was always having career numbers. He was cooking. You would see Tyler Lockett explode receiving-wise. DK early in his career, he had a lot of success early. Because you had a coordinator who had come up with a great game plan for September and October.
Yeah.
The problem is that there's a lot of really smart defensive coaches in the NFL. And once you establish tendencies, they find ways to take those away from you, those top plays.
Yep.
And you always saw the Seahawks falter down the stretch because those teams had taken those things away that they were trying to do. And then the Seahawks didn't have a counterpunch. They had a great right jab.
Yeah.
They had a great jab. But the minute that you were able to take that away and you hit them with a hook, they had no answer.
It's almost like, you know, a lot of the great offensive teams and offensive minds even who are, maybe they start out as great, having that first drive, your first 12 to 15 plays scheduled and scripted. And then what happens after that? Sometimes it's not so great.
No, there's the best offensive coaches and coordinators and defense too are the ones who can make the adjustments.
And adapt.
Sean McVay is great, not because of the first 12 he can draw up. He's great because when it's halftime, he makes the adjustment. Hey, do we need to run the football more? Do we need to look for more short passing routes, long passing routes? Those are things that Brian Schottenheimer can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're complaining about not being able to make playoff runs, right now, let me remind you, in the NFC, the longest NFC championship drought is the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
It's the Cowboys.
Isn't that juicy?
It makes it so great because it is Jerry.
Yeah.
But it's, you have a team and an organization that's supposed to be America's team, that's supposed to be known for winning, and they're not winning. And you have an owner who, back in the 90s, he made all the right moves. He pressed all the right buttons.
When he first got there.
To have success.
Yeah, before senility set in.
And now he's not. And you know what this is? You know what this hire is?
He can't get out of his own damn way.
It's Al Davis drafting in the 7th overall pick, Darius Heyward-Bey.
Yeah.
It's Al Davis 2.0, but Jerry Jones.
And Joel S. on the old YouTube chat makes a great point. How come nobody talking about how the Cowboys didn't have any other options? Who else is taking that job with Jerry running the show? And that's a great point.
Yep.
Jerry makes these kinds of hires because, for one, he knows he doesn't have to pay them a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
And two, he knows he can control them and keep them under his thumb. Like, look at Jason Garrett
right.
or Dave Campo or what have you. So, it's a very Dallas Cowboys hire.
100%. Even the guy, like, I heard this point just to reiterate what you're saying and what Joel's saying is, if you're an alpha head coach, Why would you go there? Because think about it. Most of the coaches in the NFL, they're an alpha. Now, some are like Mike Vrabel, where they're big, strong man in your face, yeah. tough guy, going to make fun of you, going to call you out.
And who in Tennessee, they were too intimidated by him to right. keep him on.
They literally fired him because he was so scary.
He was too big.
Or you're an Andy Reid type of alpha, where it's much more jovial. It's nicer, right? Don't get me wrong. When decisions need to get made in Kansas City, Andy Reid's the one who makes them.
Mm.
And he just does it in a different way, in a much nicer way, or at least that's the way it seems. He comes off as this big, jovial, nice guy. But he is the alpha. They don't ever get an alpha in Dallas because the alpha is already there.
Yeah.
The alpha is Jerry Jones.
Yes.
And he is pulling strings and he's making decisions, and they've been wrong probably since firing Parcells and hiring Wade Phillips. And that's because he's gotten to the point where he's old. His decision making is subpar. And even if Stephen Jones or the rest of the, you know, the sons or daughters, the family members try and make a play, guess what? Jerry's still going to get final say. Yeah. And so there's no reason as a good head coach or a good head coaching candidate like a Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, who had a fantastic introductory presser was fantastic today.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of people, they don't want to go and coach in Dallas because the buck doesn't stop with them. And if you want a good coach to come in and put your franchise back where it needs to be, you need a coach where the buck stops with them.
Yeah, and you know, look at Jerry with his past record with hiring guys who maybe were a big personality and a big successful coach. Bill Parcells was not there long.
Nope.
And
Jimmy wasn't there long.
How long? I guess Mike McCarthy was only out of the game for a year or two before he went back there. But
and they assumed that Mike would be so willing to want the job that he would take a pay cut.
Yeah.
And he wasn't willing to do that.
All right. Well, we got to get up. We are up against
it here.
Are
we up against it?
We are up against it here. But we do have a little bit of fun sound from Aaron Glenn at his intro presser with the New York Jets today. We'll get back to that coming up next here on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back in. We got a couple minutes here left before we get you over to primetime with Isaac and Suk. I believe it's Suk and Buck and possibly another. I don't believe that Rop is
in
town.
I see some Dutch brothers out there, so I'm guessing Schultz is
here.
Ooh,
a Schultzy Buck and, yeah. and Suk edition? That's right? A pretty fun edition. Speaking of a fun edition, over to the New York Jets, Aaron Glenn had his opening presser today, and he laid down a gauntlet that almost had me and Jeff Rust ready to run through a wall.
Players that's here now, put your seatbelts on and get ready for the ride. Put your seatbelts on and get ready for the ride. Listen, there are going to be some challenges. But with challenges becomes opportunity, gets opportunity. But here's what I do know. We're the freaking New York Jets, so we're built for this.
Yeah, we are.
Listen, I want this job. I interviewed for a number of them. But I wanted this job.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
That
it
is also, fantastic.
It had a little bit of shades of Dan Campbell when he first got the Lions. Now, it's not mm-hmm. as crazy as saying, like, I'm going to go bite kneecaps or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But Aaron Glenn, he's a former New York Jet player. It's very clear that the organization means something to him. And I don't know, Russ, if you've seen a lot about, like, how he got into coaching, but he was essentially done. He was a successful businessman. He was mm-hmm. out of football,
uh-huh.
but he was yelling at the TV, and his wife got so upset with him, she was like, go get a job.
Yeah.
And so instead of, like, trying to start out at the top or, hey, I'm positioned, I'm this, he started out at the bottom. He's built his way all the way up. Now, I don't always agree with every decision that he makes as a defensive coordinator,
yeah.
but it's clear to me that he knows how to win.
He gets
and
it.
And he's been successful, and he's going to get the most out of his players. I kind of think it's a good hire.
Well, no, and especially, it feels more like a good hire because he's a guy from basically not necessarily currently inside the mm-hmm. building, but inside the building.
Right.
You know, he was a longtime Jets player.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knows what it takes and to try to get guys mm-hmm. To embrace him in that locker room and in that scenario, in that environment.
Well, and I'll tell you right now, just by that fired me up. That had me ready to go. I'm not even a player in that room. I'll never be a player in New York. It'll never happen for me. But he's telling guys to buckle their seatbelts in and get ready to go. He seems like, and we just talked about this with Brian Schottenheimer. Brian Schottenheimer isn't an alpha. The alpha is Jerry, and no one believes in Jerry. You have Aaron Glenn, who is the alpha. in that room, and he's ready to fire his guys up. And he's seen it from the number one alpha in football right now, or number two in Dan Campbell, on how to get guys ready to go and get guys fired up. His only issue is, can he convince Aaron to go away?
Yeah, see, all right, so we got about 30 seconds left here. And on the opposite end of Aaron Glenn's fantastic introductory press conference, mm-hmm. Liam Cohen's did not go that great. We're going to have that for you here in about 15 seconds. But coming up next, for the next 4 hours of power, I see at least a Schultzy and a Big Souk. So tomorrow, I think everybody else is back. But for now, this is Rust and Rust and Ortner, excuse me.
I was going to say, I think I'm tall.
I don't know what I tried to do there. But anyway, we'll see you back here tomorrow, noon to 3 on The Fan.
Duval.
We're built for this shit.